I want to take a second to remind you to sign up for the Poso Daily Brief. It is completely free. It'll be one email that's sent to you every day. You can stop the endless scrolling, trying to find out what's going on in your world. We will have this delivered directly to you, totally for free. Go to humanevents.com/Poso. Sign up today. It's called the Poso Daily Brief. Read what I read for show prep. You will not regret it. Humanevents.com/Poso. Totally free. The Poso Daily Brief.
This is what happens when the fourth turning meets fifth generation warfare.
A commentator, international social media sensation, and former Navy intelligence veteran.
This is Human Events with your host, Jack Posobiec.
Deliver us from evil.
Joe Biden is not only dumb and incompetent, he is a mental catastrophe that is leading our country to hell. Will end up in World War III because of this man.
Overseas, the U.S. and U.K. launched airstrikes against Houthi rebels in Yemen and retaliation to their attacks on ships in the Red Sea.
President Biden is defending the retaliatory attack. He says the measure is meant to protect international commerce, but also he's getting a lot of criticism from within his own party.
Protests in Yemen after the U.S. launched strikes against the Houthi rebels in the region.
Anti-war protests also happened last night outside the White House over our U.S. response.
Any American aggression will never go unanswered. The response to any American attack will not be at the level of the operation that was recently carried out with 24 drones and several missiles, but rather much greater.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome aboard today's edition of Human Events Daily. We are live in Washington, D.C. Today is January 12th, 2024. Anno Domini. Boys, let's get the map up. Map break. We need to understand there was a serious escalation last night. The U.S. and the U.K. bombing the Houthis down in western Yemen. This is a key area of the world, a key node for international global transit. We told you before, and I warned you about the drone swarm attacks that would be coming on U.S. aircraft and U.S. air carriers. The U.S. carrier strike group is sitting right there off the coast of Yemen, the USS Eisenhower. Now, you've got the Brits came in from Cyprus. They did 3,000 miles round trip down the Red Sea, past the Gulf of Suez, all the way into the Gulf of Aden. You got the Americans there. This is right where the USS Cole was bombed 20 years ago, 24 years ago now. There's a reason this part of the world has always been enmeshed in U.S. policy for the last 150 years, and I'll explain why. Show up map two, guys. Throw up map two. Map two will show you the global trade routes as pertains to Europe, the Middle East, the Far East, and Africa. Our oil supply is currently coming from the Persian Gulf. The Persian Gulf takes you through the Strait of Hormuz and then up through the Red Sea. That's how we get our oil. However, what are the Houthis doing? They're effectively creating area denial operations for this oil supply to get through the Red Sea to make it up to Europe. Now, why does Europe matter? Well, Europe doesn't have oil anymore because of what? All right, the sanctions on Russia, because they escalate, they push NATO into Ukraine. Russia said, stop doing this. Russia invaded. They cut them off. But it turns out that you still need oil. So where are we going to get it from? Oh, we're going to go to the Arabs. We're going to go to the Middle East. We're going to go to Qatar and the Saudis and Dubai and everywhere else. We're going to get it from them. But suddenly what happens if you can't get the oil in? It's an economic chokehold that they have Europe and the West in. And this is because we've decided to not embrace nuclear technology. We decided to go green. We decided to perform all of these idiotic resource non-extraction treaties. And we talked about this as pertains to the U.S. So now what do they have to do? They've got to go all the way around. It's taking 2 weeks longer now to go all the way around the southern tip of Africa and to come forward. And it's the same deal, by the way, for all of the goods that we have manufactured in China that need to come across, at least pertains to Europe. Do you understand? Do you understand what the experts have put us into? Do you understand the spring trap that is currently being switched on right now? These have always been the choke points of globalism. And now with this escalation, guess what? Ever since we've moved past October 7th, in a post-October 7th world, the Arab world is not going to stand with the United States and the UK on this. Where was Saudi? How much money and missiles and weapons have we given to Saudi over the years? You didn't see Saudi participating in any of these strikes. Why is that? It's simple. Because the entire Middle East has turned against the US, is turning against the UK, and our leaders are comatose. CNN's up there reporting that Lloyd Austin is sitting in his hospital bed conducting airstrikes and ordering this. It's insane. It's completely insane. We are sliding into World War III. And our leaders are in the nursing home and in the ICU. We need senators to stand up and put the brakes on this. And we need someone committed to peace back in the White House. His name is Donald J. Trump. And that is the only way the people of the West are going to see our way through this. Stay tuned. Human Events Daily continues. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the best ways that you can support us here at Human Events and the work that we do is subscribing to us on our Rumble channel. Make sure you're subscribed. You hit the notifications so you'll never miss a clip. You'll never miss a new live episode, and we're putting them out every single day of the week.
When I grew up in the hood, I rolled with Bloods, and them boys had a saying. You can't be listening to all that slappy whack, trimatazole, it's a bam ship, nippy bam bam, like Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec, we are back here live, Washington, D.C. Very excited now to bring on to Human Events Daily. We have State Representative Phil Lyman, who is currently running for governor of Utah. Representative Lyman, thank you so much for joining us here at Human Events Daily.
Thank you, Jack. Thanks for everything you're doing.
So I understand that you're actually currently on making a trip, basically, here to the swamp, to Washington, D.C. I was going to say the flora and fauna behind you there doesn't exactly look like the indigenous of Utah. So how have you found the swamp, and what are you learning here in terms of running for office there in Utah?
Well, so I'm back here visiting with the weaponization committee and talking to people on the Judiciary Committee and others about the weaponization of three-letter agencies like the Bureau of Land Management, the FBI, and the Department of Justice. And so it's a lived experience for me, and I'm glad to be back here talking to them. And I've got a lot of people with me that are here talking about that issue. It's pretty important.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And so, you know, when I go look at Utah, and look, I was just out in Utah for, believe it or not, it was the very first time. And I went and visited our folks, our friends over at My Patriot Supply, who have a huge setup right there in Salt Lake City. We gave away an armored Jeep. We were joking. We were calling it a riot tank. I said, if BLM and Antifa really kick off again like they did in 2020, you're gonna need one of these going forward. And yes. I think with some of the stuff that we've seen in 2024, we might actually need that. I have to talk to those guys again. They might. You know, they might be doing another one of those. We'll just leave it at that.
Shall not be infringed.
But when I was out there, I took a look over at the current governor of Utah, Spencer Cox, and I said, I'm meeting all these people in Utah. They seem like they're conservatives, they're Westerners. You know, this is like real salt of the earth Americans, like lots of cowboys that I'm used to. And I'm a Philly guy, so I'm like, this is not my part of the world at all. But I'm loving everybody I meet until I come across Spencer Cox. Can you explain what's going on with this guy?
Well, and you know, despite personality or anything else like that, is that the policies that come through there, the love of the, you know, climate accord, the love of the Biden policy actions, the love of the national monuments, or at least the support, the unwillingness to stand up, ends up hurting people in Utah, ends up, you know, taking away jobs and roads and access. And then these agencies come in and raid communities and you know, prosecute people. And that's my own lived experience, was the prosecution of prosecuting people just to send a statement. And, You want a governor that will stand up to the federal, you know, the federal agencies and say that's not going to happen here. Instead, we've got one that says, you know, we want to disagree better, or we want to get along with the feds, or or the federal government is superior and we've got to do what they say. And, you know, that I would say in 1896, statehood meant something to Utah, and it should mean something to us now.
Well, I think that's exactly right. I 100% think that's right. And so walk me through then, what was your journey? What made you want to come from being state rep to running for governor?
Well, I was just an accountant in my little hometown when the FBI and the Bureau of Land Management did a raid on the community. And what they were doing was trying to show that we have a crisis in San Juan County, which is 8% private property. People on the East Coast don't really understand what it means to be in a public lands state or a public lands county, but San Juan County is about 8% private. The rest is publicly owned. We have uranium, we have vanadium, we have oil and gas, we have lithium and helium, all of these things, a lot of rare earth minerals. And so that's the county, you know, 15,000 people in 8,000 square miles. And they wanted to lock up the natural resources. They wanted to stop extraction, and they do it in the name of, you know, respect to Native Americans. And nobody has more respect for Native Americans than the Native Americans themselves who live there and the people who live close to them. And they weren't consulted. It was just a power play to lock up the land. So I watched the raids happen in my community. They came in with 300 federal agents, raided the community, created this real feeling of crisis. And it was surrounding Indian artifacts. And the only solution big enough was to, you know, come in and designate a national monument. And the effect was to lock up the whole area from any further extraction. This is also, by the way, has a bunch of the uranium-1 claims in San Juan County, and we didn't know too much about the uranium-1 deal. I knew that it had gone down with Hillary Clinton brokering the deal and the Clinton Foundation getting $130 million donation from Frank Giustra after it happened. But anyway, after the fact, you start to see it really roll out. And now you've got these natural asset companies that are being formed. And people can see that maybe this wasn't all just, you know, fear mongering on the part of conservatives. Maybe they really are trying to take away the land and the resources and the water and the energy of these little communities.
Well, and it's as simple as that. And that's something where and I've gone up to Alaska and I've made this statement. And, you know, Uranium One, we can certainly go down the rabbit hole there, but not too far. We don't end up on a certain list, of course. But, you know, when it comes down to it, the resources of this land, which we have, whether it's Alaska, whether it's Utah, whether it's Texas, whether it's my home state of Pennsylvania and the Marcellus Shale find, those resources ought to be used for the benefit of the communities and the people who live there and the greater benefit of our country. And it's as simple as that. And I would go up to these areas, whether it be the Pebble Mine up in Alaska or other areas down in parts of the West. And I go to even to some of the native communities and I'll say, do you guys want this extraction? I say, yes, we want the jobs. We want the development. We want everything that's involved with this. And I say, well, why don't you do it? And they say, well, the federal government won't let us do it. And then they turn around and they're selling it to foreign interests in some cases, like our uranium, which should obviously be a national security asset. It's obviously a key strategic asset of the United States. Then, of course, we know the CFIUS deal that Hillary Clinton pushed through in Uranium One. And then when it comes to our oil and gas, I also believe this is a national security interest. Go look at the Red Sea right now and the bottleneck of the choke points with the Houthis trying to bottle all of the oil up there, because that's what's coming through the Red Sea. You know, the news never talks about this, about the fact that that's our shipments, that because that's where we get our gas from. You know, it's not just the, it doesn't just magically appear at the pump, ladies and gentlemen. So it's got to come through the Red Sea. And the Houthis know this. They can strap bombs to like flying lawnmowers, these cheap made drones, and we have to send up what, $1 million missile to take it out. So we've got to do all this stuff with the carrier battle groups and et cetera, over in the Red Sea, over in the Gulf of Oman, the Gulf of Aden, the Persian Gulf, Strait of Hormuz, all of this, you know, sorry, I'm you know, got my Navy officer hat on here for a second. But we wouldn't have to do that if we just utilized the resources here at home. It's so simple.
Well, and this is the, so I was a county commissioner. I ran for county commissioner after the community was raided. And As a county commissioner, I've got a front row seat to this. I'm watching these things happen. I'm talking to the executives of Uranium One as they're explaining what's happening. I'm watching the industries being shut down. I'm watching the environmentalist groups come in and influence the Bureau of Land Management and the revolving door that they have at the national level between, you know, the Wilderness Society and the Bureau of Land Management. There's just so much collusion that's happening. And you know, you kind of ask what brought me down this path. You know, it wasn't trespassing on a little trail. It wasn't a trail, but a cause that we were defending, to kind of paraphrase Thomas Paine. And it's really important. These are not small things. They're really, really big things. And we didn't trespass. We didn't break laws, but I was prosecuted, ended up, you know, 14 months of trial and then did 10 days in jail. Thankfully it wasn't 2 years. And then after I got out of jail, I thought, you know what, I'm going to run for the state legislature. And I did. And as I get into the state legislature and see more of the same coming down through the National Governors Association, the Carnegie Institute for International Peace, whatever you want to track, it goes back to the Carnegies, it seems like, and all these things that are being influenced and coming through. And I'm saying that is not the way a state should run. That's not what a state is. And it's not that I, don't like the governor. I want a governor. I want a governor in Utah that will stand up and govern Utah as if that state boundary means something.
Well, I think it comes down to this, and this has been obviously a Republican talking point for a long time, one of Trump's talking points for a long time: drill, baby, drill. And it really just kind of comes down to that, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, because and people say, well, you can't just drill everywhere. It's like, no, you drill where the oil is. You find out where the oil is. That's where you drill.
Yeah, right.
Go drill over there. It's like, well, here's where the oil is. And you look at a well, you look at a tiny oil well after it's, you know, in production compared to these massive solar fields. And it's just mind boggling that people want to cover 12,000 acres with solar panels made in China, dependent on Chinese technology, when you could have one oil well that is hardly even recognizable, you know, from the air, and produces, you know, way more energy, much more dispatchable.
Well, yeah, it's we don't teach math in this country anymore, because they understand the energy coefficients when it comes to the difference between solar powering a battery, which might get you, you know, a little bit of, and obviously Trump on the campaign trail likes to make jokes about this all the time, and he was talking about electromagnetism recently and making jokes about that as well, and they'll attack him. But there's a point to it, right? There is a point to it, that the energy usage that we're able to get, the power that's packed into these small matters, this highly dense matter, whether it's oil, whether it's coal, whether it's gas, it's extremely important. And this is another one where, you know, when you talk about uranium, and you obviously gets you into nuclear power, this is a huge benefit, would be a massive boon. And, you know, I always kind of joke, and we're coming up on a quick break here, but we've got another segment with State Representative Phil Lyman, who's going to be running for the governorship of Utah. And I always joke, I say the aliens, you know, if they come down, they're looking at us saying, wait, you discovered nuclear energy, and then you stopped using it, and you refused to use it to power your cities, and you put it on a couple Navy ships, and that was about it. Why wouldn't you use it to power everything? It's very simple, folks. We'll be right back. Human Events Daily continues.
Today, you know, they talk about influencers. These are influencers, and they're friends of mine. Jack Posobiec. Where's Jack? Jack, he's done a great job.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here live, snowy Washington, D.C., as you can see there from our footage. But we're warm in here, and the only thing that we're raining down is hopefully some Drano. No, that's not a message to D.C. Drano, but on the swamp. And we're talking here to Phil Lyman, state representative from Utah. He's running for the governorship of Utah. Now, tell me more about this new monument, the dedication of Joe Biden. What's the story that I'm reading about out there, and how does this relate to the resource asset companies?
Yeah, so Biden came out a couple of months ago to Arizona to designate, we call it the Beatnik monument. It's got a long name, but it locked up another million acres of United States strategic uranium reserves, which I live in Blanding, Utah, which is next to the last remaining uranium processing mill in the United States that processes raw uranium. So it's jobs to Utahns. It's important to us. The next day, the FBI rolls into Provo, Utah, shoots a gentleman, Craig Robertson, in his home, 75 years old, can't get out of bed. They break through the front window, do a flashbang grenade. They 6 o'clock in the morning, then they shoot the guy 17 times because he had made some threatening statements about the president. His statements were bad.
This was in relation to, right, this was the guy. He was like the disabled veteran who was spouting off on Facebook and posting spouting memes off and stuff. The guy could barely walk. Right. No, I remember this. Okay, go ahead.
So the monument's designated. They shoot Craig Robertson. The FBI does. Biden flies into Salt Lake and he's met at the airport by the governor with, selfies and goofy pictures and hugs and what's like a party. And I thought, where is the questioning? Where's the, say, hey, Mr. President, welcome to Utah. You've got some explaining to do here. There's none of that. There's never any pushback. And that's the same thing as people in Utah are looking to the governor and saying, where's the leadership? Where are we going with this? And we saw it through COVID. We saw it with the COVID response. I mean, Governor Cox was just lockstep with the Biden administration on the shutdowns and the mandates. And, he says, just wear the damn mask and, get the shot, do all these things. And it just feels like, his favorite tool is an emergency declaration, because then he can, push these orders out on it. And it's really frustrating. And then we get into the girls in, the boys and girls sports, a bill that we passed that said the boys can't compete in high school sports, which he vetoed. And at the same time, he announces to a group of high school students, that his pronouns are he, him, and his. And that seems like a small thing. And unless you recognize that we're having this real cultural battle over our children and over gender in general. It's really undermining for the governor to do those kinds of things. And it's really frustrating to me. And it feels like a gut punch, and a gut punch that says somebody has got to step into this office that's going to govern the state of Utah to keep the people free and to keep us out from under the threats that we're facing. It just seems so pervasive.
Well, no, I think you're exactly right. And that's what I was saying before, where I said, this guy, Spencer Cox, if I have to blink and I say, wait, is this guy a Republican? Is this guy a conservative? Because he's running around basically rubber stamping Biden, hugging him, embracing him at the airport the same day that after the Robinson shooting. And then he goes around, he's all in for the locking up of the uranium resource. And again, I just keep having to pound on this, that this is something that, if you are an America First patriot, if you're someone that wants the United States to not be all involved all over the world in all of these conflagrations that we're in and propping up this system of global trade that we do with the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Army. Look, I got friends that are in the Navy that are serving right now. I've got friends that are in the Middle East serving right now in other aspects of the U.S. military. And you look at these situations, you say, why are we there? Why are we so involved in all of these things? They say, well, it's to keep open the global trade. And why do we need these resources? Why do we need global trade so much when we have it right here? And then you turn around and you see Joe Biden using, first he'll say it's Native American rights. And then the next thing he'll say is that it's climate. And then the next thing they'll always come up with some cause. They'll always come up with some reason. But all of it is locking up the resources, which, by the way, are rightfully the resources of the American people. And I'm not saying that we should do resource extraction in a haphazard way, like they'll always claim. And they say, oh, you're strip mining and you're burning down trees. I said, no. We've got lots of ways to do this. But what you are doing is you're actually demeaning and degrading the dignity and the quality of the life of the American people, the average Joe out there who's just trying to make their way through the world. And that's where the issue comes in. It's as simple as that. And then you got a guy like Governor Spencer Cox, who's more interested in telling you his pronouns than he is about protecting our children or about protecting the workers and the regular people of this country. And I say, he seems like a nice guy, but maybe we don't need nice guys right now. Maybe we need people who can actually get the job done.
Andrew Breitbart said politics is always downstream from culture. And so you have these cultural things. And that's so when we talk about, saying that boys can't use girls' locker rooms or bathrooms, and the left comes out saying, oh, that's all the Republicans want to talk about is these silly bathroom issues. It's like, it's not silly bathroom issues. It's the kind of the core of our of our culture. So these things are important. And a governor that signals otherwise basically is playing for the wrong team. You know, and you see the left. You see the left undermining and destabilizing. They go straight to the county level and the city level to infiltrate and get policies put forward. The only real buffer you have between the federal and the people are the governors and the legislators of those states. And if they are not going to stand in that spot, I mean, they just the feds, maybe not even the feds, but the agencies, the associations, the plan, they'll just roll right over the top of us.
Well, I think it's exactly right. And at the end of the day, you know, this is why the United States has a system of federalism. This is why the United States was set up in such a way where we do not have, or I should say, we're not supposed to have, okay, we're not supposed to have a strong federal government that centrally controls and outlines everything for the states. But, you know, let's you know, it's not 2012. I think we've realized by now that that's not exactly how the system works anymore. We do have a federal government that's completely out of control. We do have central planning in this country. We do have a country where the money that comes from this, and by the way, you heard it earlier this week in the debate and the Republican debate that was held. I watched it on CNN. I know. Look, I watch it so other people don't have to. This was Haley and DeSantis, and both of them were talking about how they would fund these various programs, whether it be healthcare, whether it be education, through the federal government. And it's like even we as Republicans are almost stuck with this, because once the federal money starts flowing, it becomes very hard to make this argument to say, oh, well, you know, maybe it should be state funded, or maybe we shouldn't have the federal money. And then suddenly, oh, they say, oh, you're against this, you're against this. They say, no, we want more state control. So anyway, kind of a long-winded way of saying that we need to find more ways for state governments to be able to fight back and to stand on their own against this federal overreach, because that's how we get a better system. You turn it on its head. This was how we had a situation where, I'll never forget this, that you had a state school board, just a local school board at the state level, at the local level, saying that they wanted to have schools without masks. They had decided they didn't want masks in their schools. And the governor said, he endorsed it. He said, I endorsed the plan. You shouldn't have masks in your schools. Governor of Tennessee at the time. And an unelected bureaucrat named Dr. Anthony Fauci decides to overrule them. Then the liberals sue this in court, and the school board is forced to continue the mask. I said, wait a minute. How do we have a situation where an unelected bureaucrat, and this is similar to what you get into with the land management situation, where an unelected bureaucrat from Washington, D.C. can make decisions over something that ought to be the right of the people who actually live there?
Yeah. Well, Kristi Noem showed us how to respond to that and just say no. You know, this is South Dakota. We're not going to do that. And I wish Utah would have just said, you know, thanks for the suggestion, Fauci, but we're not going to do that here. Instead, they embraced it and went with it. I wanted to get in before we get too close to the end. I've got Riley Gaines coming out next week on the 18th and 19th.
Oh, that's great.
What I wanted, yeah. So, and Riley's phenomenal. I want to give her a chance to come and thank the legislators who put together an emergency session to override the governor's veto on that bill that he had vetoed, and so that's happening. And really, we just want to send a message that people can affect the government if they're willing to get involved, and we don't just have to sit back and take what's coming. Here in Washington, you know, we've got Senator Lee. I remember my first time as a county commissioner coming back to Washington, and just the feeling that I had, and I said, you know, it's not right that a county commissioner from a once wealthy county comes to Washington, D.C. with his cap in his hand, trying to get some permission to exist in our county. So what you're saying, Jack, is exactly right. And that's, people have got to be free. That's what the Constitution is about. That's they've got to be able to live in these places and you know, raise their families.
It really is
in the middle of it.
It really is. It really is as simple as that. State Representative Phil Lyman, I love that Riley Gaines is going to be coming out there, is going to be doing some stuff with you. Tell where, if people want to go, if they're in Utah or they're near Utah, they want to go to one of these events, they want to follow you, get more information, where can they go? Now, by the way, before you mention that, I say it's great that Utah has, you know, at least one good senator out there in Senator Lee.
Yes. Yeah, we have one. So, yeah, Lyman.
Hopefully one day he'll have two.
Yeah, Lyman 4 Utah, FOR, and there's a spot on there to buy tickets. So on January 18th at the University of Utah, and then the following night down in St. George on the south end of the state, Dixie State, I guess Utah Tech now. It's going to be a great event, and we'd love to see people come out. Riley's really inspirational to these young girls, these young kids, and she's got a great story, because I always say she's the truth against which the lies collided, and that's what you want, someone that stands in that space when it's time.
That's a great line. I actually like that line a lot. And you'd think there's someone who understands how the pitfalls of, you know, just letting in this radical ideology, gender study, gender ideology, when it starts with pronouns, and then it starts with your truth and my truth, and then we get to a position where you're Riley Gaines and you have to be, you're swimming and you're in the locker room with a dude. Phil Lyman, state representative, he is running for governor. Check him out, folks. Human Events Daily continues after this.
Jack? Where's Jack? Where is he? Jack, I want to see you. Great job, Jack. Thank you. What a job you do. You know, we have an incredible thing. We're always talking about the fake news and the bad, but we have guys, and these are the guys who should be getting Pulitzers.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here live, Human Events Daily. Folks, look, I feel like I say this every day, but we know the world is in flames. The Bidenomics is a complete and total disaster, but you know what? It cannot and it will not ruin my day. And you know why? That's because I start my day with a hot America First cup of Blackout coffee. This coffee is 100% America and is 100% committed to conservative values. From sourcing the beans to the roasting process, customer support and shipping, they embody true American values and accept no compromise on taste or quality. When Tanya Tay makes my Blackout coffee, I know it is going to be a high energy day in the Poso household. So go to blackoutcoffee.com/Poso and use promo code POSO20 for 20% off your first order. Check out all the gear selection, incredible gift ideas while you are there. So go to blackoutcoffee.com/Poso. Be awake, not woke. That's blackoutcoffee.com/Poso. It powers here this show, Human Events Daily. It powers humanevents.com. It'll power you too. Now, I also want to point out, we do have breaking news that came in during the last piece there, and Tucker Carlson is reporting this, that Gonzalo Lira, a U.S. citizen and a YouTuber, has supposedly died while in Ukrainian custody. We're getting that from, by way of his father, that comes out. Just another one of these world conflicts that we're getting blowback on. Our guest here for this segment and the next couple of segments is Will Donahue, the president of the College Republicans of America. Will, make some sense of this to us. Why is it that we seem to have Republicans that want to support the United States getting into a war in Ukraine, getting into a bigger war in the Middle East, and then you got people out there like Donald Trump saying we need to pull back from this junk?
You know, I've said this before, and I'm going to say it again. Joe Biden is the worst president we have ever had when it comes to United States foreign policy. He's just weak. He's weak. This never would have happened under President Trump. And if we continue to have another 4 years of Joe Biden in the White House, we're going to continue to have these problems on the world stage. We're seeing it in Ukraine. We're seeing it in Gaza. We're seeing it in Yemen. You know, Iran and China and Russia feel emboldened because we are not leading through strength right now.
Well, I think it's exactly right. Now, talk to me a little bit, though, about sort of this split that we see within the Republican Party, because, you know, actually, a long time ago, I got my start. I was the chairman of the Temple University chapter of College Republicans all the way back in 2006, 2007. That's kind of where Raposo, you know, kind of cut his teeth, made his bones, whatever you want to call about it. Not that I have any bones to speak of anymore. But, you know, when it comes down to it, why do we have this split in the party? And how is this playing out at the top level?
I think we had this party split really start sometime in the 90s. And Jack Buchanan talks about it quite a bit. And the main difference, I think, has to do with some social policy, but it's typically on the foreign policy lines. It was a divide that started really under Bush the first, but you know, was solidified under Bush the second, where we switched from a Cold War and pre-Cold War policy of, you know, reactionary military engagements, and we switched over to this war on terror preemptive strike policy. Part of that was to take power in the federal government in terms of the surveillance state. Part of that is using our attacks in the Middle East to go after rare minerals and oil. And, you know, every 10 years we would throw a third world country up against a wall and show the world who's boss. It's like, yeah, America, we just beat up on a country that is using rocks and spears to attack us. Great. That's not what conservatives have typically believed. These are Democrats that left the Democrat Party, joined the Republican Party in the pursuit of business resources and money, and they took control of the establishment. You know, they pushed out Reagan and Roosevelt type conservatives that believed that we should put our nation's interests first, that we should not intervene in countries unnecessarily, and that we should be reactionary. Donald Trump destroyed that in 2016. You know, neoconservatism is mostly dead within the party. Nikki Haley and the surviving Koch brother over at Americans for Prosperity are trying to resurrect it. But the American people voted it down in 2008. They voted it down in 2012. And, they showed that they wanted a paleoconservative direction with Donald Trump in 2016. And it's about to come back.
So as you sit there and the College Republicans of America is expanding and expanding, the former, sort of nationwide coalition does not seem like, I just checked their Twitter feed. They haven't even posted anything since December. And the current chairwoman of the CRNC hasn't posted anything on Twitter since like last summer. And I think the last thing she has up is like condemning anti-Semites and the party. So what are you guys doing over there? It's so ridiculous to me. So I thank God that you're out there actually fighting on multiple fronts for the party and really for our country.
Yeah, the CRNC, the College Republican National Committee, I'm not going to talk too much about them. They were founded in 1892, but they're about as dead as neoconservatives in the modern Republican Party. You know, their embers still support neocon Nikki. I share in Senator Paul's sentiments of never Nikki. I loved that video came out this morning. Our students nationwide share in my view that Donald Trump is the true leader of the Republican Party right now. And we are the resurrected America First College Republicans. We're going to make the College Republicans great again.
Well, I think that's exactly right. And really, Nikki Haley, I think, has become emblematic of this fight. And I'd love to say, we had Tucker Carlson on the show, and he said, I made a joke. I said to Tucker, I said, oh, you'd be cool with Nikki Haley being on Trump's ticket. And he just froze. He froze like in shock when I said this, and he, no, I would not be okay with that. And he said he'd be actively campaigning against it. Now, of course, I was, trying to poke him a little bit to see if he was interested in being on the ticket. But now we have Rand Paul. And I got to say, I said this on TimCast all the way back, I think, August of 2022. I said I'd love to see a Rand Paul Donald Trump ticket. Now he's come out and Rand Paul has said that he's not endorsing yet in the primary, said nice things about Trump, but he also said nice things about DeSantis and RFK as well. I know he'd met with RFK recently. They're very simpatico in terms of their targeting of Dr. Fauci. But what do you think the chances would be of a Trump-Rand Paul ticket?
I think it's funny that President Trump said he knew who was going to be his VP pick. And then the day after, Rand Paul says he's got a huge announcement and he's out with
interesting timing.
It's really interesting timing. Personally, my Twitter feed this morning, I also am in favor of a Trump Paul ticket. I think he would be a terrific choice for the president. A little bit of a balance on the fiscal responsibility front. I think they're pretty much in line on immigration and foreign policy. And I think President Trump would be very, very smart to choose Senator Paul for his running mate.
Well, and then you've got someone as well. You're talking about the son of Ron Paul right there. Someone who, when it comes to fiscal policy, when it comes to monetary policy, when it comes to currency, when it comes to the Federal Reserve, and when it comes to foreign policy, you're really looking at someone who's just cut from a completely different cloth than Lindsey Graham and Nikki Haley and these sort of America Last Republicans.
Yeah, Rand Paul is kind of an interesting character in Washington. He doesn't really care what anybody thinks about him. I think most people kind of disagreed with his statements on funding the 9/11 memorial a few years ago. He kind of made it as a statement of we need to control our fiscal spending. And a lot of these Republicans in, you know, quote-unquote Republicans in Washington, like Mitch McConnell and others, just seem to want to continue to spend. And I think that's a really good addition to the Trump ticket, is a promise that we are going to rein in spending. But further than that, I mean, one of the problems we had in 2020 was the Libertarian candidate kind of splitting the ticket a little bit in some of these states, having Rand Paul as a self-defined Libertarian. I think he fits more of the mold of a paleo-libertarian in his social views. But I think that will go a long way towards signaling to a smaller base of the right that we are open to their ideas as well. And I think it will help Donald Trump's chances in a hypothetical election against Joe Biden, which we have no idea is actually going to happen.
I think you're right. Our guest is Will Donahue. We're coming up on a quick break here. Will's got some great stories up, humanevents.com, other places. Make sure you go check those out. Stick with us here, Human Events Daily. We're chopping it up, folks. As we slide into World War III, the question is simple. Can we get out of it? What is the leverage for the American people? And I'll tell you right now, this is why they're fighting so hard against Donald Trump. Stay tuned. Human Events returns.
Long hours. I'm always listening to Human Events with Jack Posobiec.
All right, Jack Posobiec back here live, Human Events Daily. Look, folks, I got to tell you that, and here's a question. Have you ever had a conversation with somebody and the next thing you know, you're getting ads for products that match exactly what you were talking about? Between the government, big tech, corporate America, and criminals, your privacy is compromised 24/7. Now that's on top of the side effects from radiation that the cell phone corporation swears totally safe. Numbing effects of social media. Look, detox from your phone. You can detox today with Silent. Silent is a light and portable Faraday sleeve for your mobile device that protects your privacy, your security, and your health. This is patented Silent Pocket Faraday technology, which blocks harmful radiation and all wireless signals, plus giving you the peace of mind that your personal data never ends up in the wrong hands. Go silent today at slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO and save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. Look, I'm in the spotlight. I'm challenging the government, the Klaus Schwabs of the world. World Economic Forum starts on Monday, folks. The big corporate interests, the multinationals, this is on top of the left. You got to protect your privacy. We know that swattings are on the rise. That's why I'm so thankful that Silent was created. Go to slnt.com/poso. Again, that's slnt.com/poso. Use promo code POSO to save 15% plus free shipping on qualifying orders. All right. Now, seeing as this is the last segment of the week, Monday is Iowa caucus day, the first votes that will be cast in the 2024 election. Will Donahue, what is your prediction?
My prediction is Trump is going to have a sweeping victory, but we can't take it for granted. You know, there's a lot of conditions on the ground between, you know, snowstorms and, you know, things that may or may not be happening between campaigns. You never know what's going to happen. I think with all the money Nikki Haley is spending in Iowa right now, she's likely going to beat out DeSantis. I think DeSantis will likely probably drop out, according to one of his other announcements that came out, and Trump's going to have a resounding victory, seeing that he's got over 55% support in the Republican Party.
Well, I think that's right. And one of the things that I've predicted is that if Trump comes in any, you know, even if it's 1 or 2 points any bit lower than, you know, some of his highest polls, they'll run with this narrative that Trump won, but he underperformed. He underperformed the polls. He underperformed and, you know, Haley overperformed. They might even try this sort of like, and then they'll start getting into the Jeff Rowe magic math theory. And the magic math is that, oh, well, if you can pick up enough delegates here and enough delegates in New Hampshire, and Haley is expected to do well in New Hampshire, especially if she's able to pick up some of Chris Christie's support. There's like the one state where he actually was doing well. Then you go to South Carolina, where she's, of course, got favorite son, favorite daughter, I guess, in that case, status as the former governor. She does have an ability. But I also understand that you have a bit of an announcement to make. You're going to be breaking some news here on Human Events Daily. Let's have it.
The College Republicans are very happy to announce in an unprecedented decision. We have endorsed President Trump again for his 2024 run. The college Republicans typically take the stance of the party that we don't endorse in primary elections. I think with President Trump's overwhelming lead and the attempts by the left to remove him from the ballot in a very undemocratic move, this is the move that the college Republicans needed to make. After talking with hundreds of our students, we've got thousands of students across the country, and talking to our board of governors that oversee each of the states, it was an overwhelming vote. Almost all of our national committee men decided to endorse President Trump. So we are so happy to announce that. And I think it's indicative of the current movement of the party. Young males in particular are becoming conservative and reporting to be conservative in the highest amounts ever recorded. And I think this is a good reflection of where my generation is at supporting Donald Trump.
You know, as someone who's on campus, and congratulations on the vote, and as someone who's on campus, who's talking to college students these days, you know, I saw that piece as well. What is it about young males particularly that is making them come closer to the Republican Party when you're on campus, when you're doing tabling or outreach? What are they telling you?
They're telling me that they're fed up. They are tired of an academic class, specifically targeting white males, but this is males in general, that we are evil, that we don't have a place in society, and that, we're second class citizens almost to an extent. These DEI programs are absolutely horrible for men's health. And so what we're seeing is, Instagram and TikTok algorithms are changing. Men are flocking towards father figures that tell them that they're not bad, that they are good. It's good to be masculine. It's good to be strong. And they're reverting towards tradition. We're flocking towards traditional churches, the Orthodox and the Catholic Church, traditional Latin Mass and liturgy. I think it's an important move, and I think it was pretty much a necessary step in the evolution of the American cultural experiment.
Well, I think it's exactly right. Look, when you've got you're going to a campus in the United States today and you're told that just by showing up because of the color of your skin or your sexual gender, which you were born with, that there's something wrong. I got two little boys, and what have they ever done to anybody? But just because they're white males, suddenly they have to work twice as hard as anyone to get into school, twice as hard to make rank in the military, twice as hard to get into an Ivy League institution or get into a Fortune 500 company. It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's completely insane. It's everything the left claims about bigoted and all of the other words that you want to use out there, but it's quite simple. And so I would say that you are seeing a backlash to this, and they went too far. Right. They absolutely went too far. They've had the Civil Rights Act since the 1960s, but they've gone way overboard with this stuff. And that is why going into MLK Day, of course, is also on Monday, that I think there's going to be a lot of people that start to question these things. Will Donahue, we've got about a minute left. Tell people, where can they go to find you, to follow your work and what you have planned coming up?
Absolutely. They can follow us on social media at US College GOP. That's our website as well, uscollegegop.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at RealWillDonahue. What we've got planned is a total renovation of the College Republicans. I'm aiming to boost us up to 250 chapters in close to 40 states by the end of this year. We've got a terrific team. We're growing really quickly. I'd like to have a huge convention at the end of the year, start putting a lot of energy back into the GOP's main campaign force. And we're showing we've got results right now. I got 40 kids on the ground in Iowa at the caucus. We got close to another 100 students on the phone lines across the country campaigning for Donald Trump, volunteering their time. We've got a lot of kids mobilizing on the ground, and with the right support, I think we can take this organization to new heights, the likes of which we haven't seen the College Republicans acting in over 50 years.
Amen. We're going to take the country back, and to do so, we need to take the party back. Will Donahue, thank you so much for joining us here. Folks, again, we need to look at what's going on. The death of Gonzalo Lira in Ukraine was a murder. You need to understand this. This was done by the Ukrainian government, Victoria Nuland, and others. Heads will roll over this. Ladies and gentlemen, as always, you have my permission to lay ashore. The front line is Iowa on Monday.